Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
There are some stories that are so unbearable that the world chooses to look away, but others choose to act. In this segment, we're going to be speaking to people who are doing just that. We're talking to Rabbi Aaron Zilberg. We are speaking to Saul Jasinovsky and Michael Kransdorf from the Jewish National Fund, from the JNF, about this joint initiative that brings attention to the hostages that have been held in Gaza. We wanted to explore this campaign and to talk about the difference that it makes, differences that are not only symbolic, but actually helps in the healing as well. Well, good morning, you guys.
Morning.
Thank you for all being in studio and for being so well behaved until this point. Let's talk about this initiative. Michael, let's start with you. How did this initiative between the base and JNF come about?
So really, I think Saul Jasinovsky, who's with us today, was one of the people that was the shatran that really introduced the two organizations. Saul came on our solidarity, the JNF solidarity trip to Israel, mm-hmm. with you as well, Howard, mm-hmm. actually.
And I remember
when we were there, we met with in Hostage Square with some of the relatives of hostages that were still in Gaza at the time, and we realized that there was, as the South African, we felt so frustrated, the South Africans, what could we do to help? How could we play a role in supporting Israelis and Israel during this war? And we came up with the idea that we should think about bringing hostages to South Africa, returned hostages, hostage families for rest and recovery and for respite. And Saul introduced us to Rabbi Zilberg from the base. And it's been a brilliant, a really brilliant partnership between two very different organizations, obviously.
Because one's about trees and one isn't. Is that wrong?
You know how would you tell us our tagline of the JNF needs to be more than just trees?
Yes, exactly. Saul, when you got involved in this, how much of it was, and I'll just look back then, not now, is how much of it was actually about the healing of the hostages and how much of it was about education, information, and telling those stories?
So at the time, my wife and I have had a lot of experience, thank God, with healing trips in South Africa with regard to injured soldiers.
You run a spa.
I beg your pardon?
You ran a spa, but you don't.
We spend a lot of time at
the spa.
Oh,
that's different.
We don't run a spa,
okay,
yeah.
Fine.
But there's big healing elements at a spa. Right. I'd highly recommend it. We've been very privileged to bring out about 140 injured soldiers, and we've seen the life-changing effects of that. And I think just being embraced by this community and this beautiful country, we thought it was a natural fit. Obviously, with my relationship with the base and Rabbi Zilberg, there is a huge emphasis on education, community awareness, mm-hmm. and offering mm-hmm. the community things that would not necessarily be available. So the idea then started as respite and healing and an opportunity for them. And it was a natural progression to allow closure and people to face this issue head on and raise awareness and almost close a circle, because a lot of people had taken on hostages and were davening for specific hostages and then got to, thank God, meet them in person.
Yeah. It, as you say, it closes the circle. Rabbi Zilberg, there is something about the South African community that encourages healing. What is it? Whenever you're ready.
That's quite a question.
Sorry. Well, yeah.
The origin of it.
Yeah.
My feeling is that, first of all, as a community, we've gone through quite a lot. Mm. We go through quite a lot. And we're also somehow very naturally kind people, kind and good people. So in the context of this project, it's really come out in full force, the unbelievable outpouring of love and kindness and wanting to be part of it and wanting to share in it. And it's actually been an amazing experience of an illustration of togetherness, kindness, giving, and actually inspiration. and actually inspiration.
Yeah. What surprised you, or what surprised you most about these trips?
That initially it was really all about doing something for them.
Yes.
As Saul mentioned, you know, the progression of, but in truth it was really all about them, and it still really remains about them. But as much as we have done for them, what they do for us is truly incredible.
So, Michael, what is that? Like, what have you gained from this?
I think a really deep appreciation of what it means to be part of the Jewish people. I think, you know, to see the outpouring of support from our community, the crazy things, people have dropped off cupcakes for the hostages. People have offered, people just want to help and be connected. And I think people have offered to give services, to clean their teeth, to do their hair, to give toys to the kids. It's just been an unbelievable response. And that's showed me, yeah, what it means to be part of the Jewish people, how connected everybody feels to this issue, to the hostages, and the fact that they remain, 50 of them still remain in Gaza. You know, almost 2 years on, people are still praying for them, are still thinking about them every day. From them themselves, about resilience. I think it's been amazing to hear their stories and it's horrendous what they've been through, but it's also been very inspiring to see how they've come out the other side and how they post this trauma, looking to live their lives in a positive way. So it's actually been very inspiring, and for myself as a personal self-reflection and journey, I've learned a lot about how one can, you know, live your best life despite what things may come at you.
Rabbi Zilberg, from a religious perspective, because some are religious, some aren't religious, the crowds that you're speaking to are completely diverse. Is there a religious... Or, no, not is there. What is the Jewish religious component that runs as a thread through all of these discussions that you've had with multiple hostages?
So it's an amazing, I love that question. It's got a lot of components to it. But just initially when your question started, I thought you were speaking about like the religious component in this project, which I think on a certain level you are, and then also the impact of it. But I'll say this, which I think the two are very much interconnected, that we also decided from the very beginning that we would not impose an agenda with regards to these trips. And that manifests on every level, not just religiously, but we wouldn't impose an agenda on these people. Primarily, these trips are about them. And this is why it gets complicated with regards to even events and functions and media, where so many people would like to do more with these guests. When it comes around to it, we prioritize them. We never impose an agenda upon them.
Is that your way of apologizing for not bringing us enough hostages to speak to?
The truth is, I'll just make a blanket apology to you.
We brought a lot of hostages. Not all of them have spoken.
Yeah,
fair enough.
But in relation to, and just on that point, we do appreciate all that you do, Howard. So thank you.
You didn't need to say that.
I didn't need to, but I wanted to.
Fine.
But going back to the question, I think that what we've realized is that they so appreciate it as well. And in truth, there's been an amazing impact, ironically, religiously as well, because there's been an amazing bridging experience between very different lifestyles, philosophies on so many different levels of this project.
Well, I certainly have found that in my experience with interviewing people who are either survivors of Nova or whatever it would be, and could be somebody sitting with head to toe tattoos and body piercings, and they say, you know, there was something that put me in that position, and thank God. And I always ask the question, who are you today? Versus who you were before you're on the way to the music festival. And that answer has always got a deep connection to belief and faith. There's no question about that.
Very much so. And I'll just add to that, even beyond the people that have actually been changed, even those that have stayed strong to their particular viewpoint, which exist.
Of course.
There has been still a bridge between the different philosophies and lifestyles and worldviews. A bridge in the sense that we've had comments, like I had a comment recently this week where someone said to me, thank you for showing me a different type of orthodoxy. Now, I don't know if that's you know, really appropriate or not, but from her perspective, she felt that. And we were talking about it, and we feel very strongly that we have been able to, it wasn't our intention, it still isn't our intention, but we have been able to actually bridge very different types of people together in this common cause of togetherness, kindness, and being there for one another.
So you spent quite a bit of time with the hostages who come out in their quiet moments. How are they, when they are alone in those quiet moments, versus the what we see on a stage? Because I sometimes am worried, and I just want to give some context to why I'm asking the question is. And I have asked him this. Sometimes you don't want to always be locked in that inspiring, being the inspiring person stage or image. Healing actually takes place when you're alone and in pain as well, maybe even more so. Are you able to see that?
Very much so. Mm-hmm. So I think one of the privileges that we've been afforded through this project is that we connect with these people not as hostages. We connect with them as people. And we spend a lot of time with them, and we spend a lot of time running around and going to the shops and going on what they call safari and spending time on the Jeep. And we get the privilege of seeing them as people, not as hostages. And thank God. If I think about everyone that's been out here, we've maintained very, very close relationships, and I speak to most of them at least once a week, if not more. And moments that you described are moments that we really can hold as successes in this project. We had a lady who had not been able to sleep since she didn't speak. We hopefully bring her out to speak soon. She was quite viciously sexually abused. And she said that for the first time in South Africa, it was the first time she was able to sleep without sleeping pills.
Amazing.
That's one of the examples of healing that we've witnessed firsthand. There's a lot of people that have been able to tell their stories. Our guests who are coming this week, he told his story, and he said it was the first time that his wife had heard his story last week.
Unbelievable.
And
that's the Seagulls, right?
Yeah. No, the Shohams.
Oh, the Shohams.
Tal and Adi Shoham. Right. He was held hostage for 505 days. His wife and two young children were held hostage also. We have someone like Elia Cohen.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Elia Cohen had just been released 4 weeks before he came to South Africa, and he wasn't going to speak at all. He wasn't going to share his story. At the event that we held, we asked him to get mic'd up, and he said, "No, he's not speaking." And he sat on stage, and he decided then and there, for the sake of the South African community and his own healing, he was going to share his story, and he spoke for 45 minutes.
Unbelievable.
And the community here embraced him so wholly that he found the strength to share his story publicly for the first time. Noah Ergamani is another example of that. Yeah. When she was here, it was the first time she had ever told her story publicly, and she felt safe to do so. So just by building these relationships and being so warmly embraced gives them a sense of security of what it means to be Jewish and what it means to be part of a diaspora community the strength involved with that.
I'm going to ask what's going to sound like a very rude question, so whoever wants to answer it can answer it. But just because somebody is a survivor and just because somebody is a hostage, has been a hostage, we obviously feel the world of empathy, sympathy for them. But they might have been a moron before it, or somebody of very limited ability. And just because they're a survivor doesn't actually make them more intelligent. And I've spoken with people that I thought, your political view is idiotic, and it was probably idiotic beforehand. I really, really feel for what you've been through, but just because you've been through that doesn't actually make you an oracle on things political. How do we deal with that?
I would love and respect you dearly, but you're very wrong in this question.
Tell me.
These people aren't oracles. And they're not just survivors. the normal people that had normal homes and normal jobs.
So is it our reaction to them that's the problem?
Yes and no. It's our reaction in that we're so grateful and we really give thanks to Hashem that they're able to have survived this and able to come here. And through the building of this project, we've able to bring them out here. But they're just normal people. And like I was saying to you, in those quiet times when we're sitting in the game reserve, just having a chat around the fire, we're talking about work, we're talking about family, we're talking about how difficult it is to get the kids ready in the morning. They aren't oracles. Some of them are, and some of them have stepped up.
And some are absolutely incredible and inspiring people, but others are just people that have been through hell.
But they're just people that have been through hell and come out the other side and have chosen to live. And that in and of itself is inspiring.
Absolutely amazing. It's true. It is true. And they have, and they are going through, they're prepared to share their story. They're coming here, they are sharing their story.
So those that we've brought out that aren't prepared to share their story publicly, we've been very privileged that they've shared their story with us. And it's almost like word vomit. They would make great guests on your show.
They would,
because they actually, when they find that safe space, they can't stop. Because it's the first time
that doesn't make a good guess, but never mind. I hear what you're saying. I do hear what you're saying. What about South African media? When you have an event, I'm assuming that they're invited. They know about this. Have they shown any interest in being there, Michael?
Very limited. I must be honest with you, Howard. We send out media releases for every event, and we get very limited responses.
What do they do? Just ignore it?
Yeah, just ignore it. We have AFP have been quite good. They send their photojournalist. He's come to almost every event.
Okay.
But besides, that's an international media outlet. But the local newspapers, News 24, once covered one of the events. But we haven't had any real interest. It's unfortunate. The diplomatic corps has been very supportive. We've had a lot of diplomats that have come.
Right. So events. Which, for example?
Germany's been very supportive. Japan, the USA.
Austria.
We've had really Austria,
Lithuania.
Amazing. That's really... And how closely is this coordinated through the Israel office?
Through the embassy?
Mm.
Yeah, we work very closely with the embassy. They obviously... aware of every trip, and they've been very, very supportive of the project. A big thank you to them, really, for all the support for this. And it's done in hand and glove with them. We work very closely with them.
So tell me about the next event that is taking place.
So as Saul said, the Shoam family is visiting on Sunday, and we're going to hear them speak. It's Tal and his wife Adi and their two children. The whole family was kidnapped from Kibbutz Beri, and they just spoke in Cape Town last week, and it was an amazing talk. Very deep insights in what they experienced in Gaza, and we heard things and learned things that we have not heard from other hostages before. So we looking very forward to their talk in Joburg.
It is not to cut you off, but it is sold out. So just to mention, unfortunately,
it's
fully sold out.
This is not about...
Wanted to make it... No, because we've got we're at capacity fully.
Which is incredible.
Yeah, we are bringing out another very special hostage, Orlevi, but we'll put out details regarding him in the next few weeks.
Rabbi Zilberg, once you've got the mic, I was going to ask you anyway, a final question from you is, what have you learned from all of these hostages?
I've learned the tremendous power of experience. So just going back to your point, it might be, and Saul's point, it might be that these people are regular people, and they certainly are. In some ways, it makes it more inspiring. But through their experiences, that somehow they were chosen to experience, they have an insight and lessons to teach that are really incredible. But primarily, I would say, the tremendous power of togetherness, working together, unity, kindness. You bring those ingredients together, it's unbelievably inspiring to everyone who's actually involved.
No question.
It's powerful.
No question. Something that I've always felt is you have these discussions and you try and bring them some comfort, but you realize by the end of it, it's you that's been comforted, which is just an amazing, amazing thing, because it just shows you how powerful this is. Karen's saying, the incredible initiative, ordinary people, but to make you feel extraordinary. And that is absolutely the case. Thank you guys for all the work that you are doing for the hostages, for us all, because these are the stories that we need to hear, and these are the people that we do need to meet. This is where we love and leave you. I hope you have a fantastic weekend, a Shabbat Shalom, a meaningful fast on Sunday, and we'll be back with you on Monday morning, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Don't be late.